Wednesday, May 30th, 2012, and welcome to episode 132 of Tech Talk for Teachers. I'm Tom Grissom.
And I'm Cindy Rich.
Well, welcome again to another episode of Tech Talk for Teachers, and this time we have a couple of pre-recorded segments for you because Dr. Rich was out of town this week, but I have her with me in the studio now.
Right.
So let's go ahead and give just a quick rundown of what today's show is
about. Sounds good.
So first of all, we have for you what we're calling the Linux Challenge. And we had Dr. Rich as our guinea pig this month, as last week I gave her a Linux laptop.
And I was a newbie to the system and very intimidated.
So she has about a week and a half under her belt right now. So we'll hear about her perspectives of how that went. Mm-hmm. And then next up on the list, we have the National Teaching with Primary Sources
Directors Meeting.
Okay. Which is, if we could do time travel right now, is where you're at right now.
Right. I'll be sitting in the Library of Congress right now.
So you'll be out in D.C. next week.
I will.
Okay. And then finally, we have our Technology Picks of the Week.
We wrap it up.
All right. So here we go. Let's go into the first segment and enjoy. The first segment that we're going to introduce today, we're going to call the Linux Challenge. And if you remember from last month's episode, we talked a little bit about Ubuntu, which is a version of Linux. And it was just coming out, the latest version, version 12.04, was just coming out at the end of April. And it is a long-term support release. It's called LTS, which means that Ubuntu will support that this time for 5 years.
Oh, okay.
So, you know, we have different versions of Windows and Mac, and I'm going to bounce back and forth using the Windows and Mac because that's what everybody's most familiar with. But Linux has been around since the early 1990s.
Wow. Okay.
Yeah, it's just a different operating system, and it does many of the same things that both Windows and Mac will do, and it does many things better than Windows or Mac will do. It's 100% free.
Amazing.
It's open source software, so there's teams of programmers scattered all around the world that work on this and using the open source philosophy. So we kind of used Cindy as our guinea pig. So about 1 week ago, I think it was last Monday.
It was.
I had an older laptop that was, it's over 5 years old now, I believe. And I loaded up Linux on it.
Yep.
And I
complained about how heavy it was and cumbersome because I'm used to the iPad and all of that.
Yeah, laptops have changed a lot in the last 5 years.
Absolutely.
But anyway, so we thought we'd run this little experiment out there because I think it is worthy. And again, coming up on summertime, I'm all about experimenting and trying new things out there.
Sure.
So last Monday, I gave her the laptop, and I think about the only instructions I gave you was, I said, you know, the start button in Windows, it's usually in the lower left-hand corner, and this version of Linux, you have the launch bar on the left-hand side, which is the different types of programs, and if you're familiar with Mac, it's kind of similar to what the dock is
in
using the Macintosh.
Right, because you can put your dock on the side if you want.
But it's designed to stay over there on the left-hand side. I kind of think where they're going with this is the buttons are very large. They're trying to make it more touchscreen friendly.
Oh, I see that.
Because the next evolution, you know, with all these touchscreens coming out, it looks very, you know, to me, it just reminds me, it just wants to be touched.
It looks like the iPad screen.
Uh-huh. Except instead of the iPad, the document's scattered everywhere. It's just in a line right up and down.
Right.
And, of course, you can add different applications and little icons on that desktop, just like the iPad. You could probably make it look very similar to the iPad if you wanted to.
Okay, my question for you is, Who is going to use this? Because every computer I've bought has had an operating system on it. Mm-hmm. So who's going to use this? Who would do this? Is somebody that wants to upgrade and doesn't have the cash or doesn't have the cash flow within their district or school or just at home?
Right.
to do it. And so this is an option to have a newer operating system.
Right. Yeah, traditionally in the past, it's kind of been for people that have older hardware, such as what we have here. Mm-hmm. It runs very efficiently. So it will run as quickly as today's hardware on hardware 5 years ago.
Okay.
And you may have noticed that. Again, I don't know how responsive it was for you.
It was very. And the shutdown and startup.
Yeah.
Blew me away. I mean, yeah. It was so quick for
it,
that.
It doesn't have a lot of the overhead that both Windows and Mac have. Now, the reason that Windows and Mac exist is Mac has its own. They built their own hardware, so they're going to push their own product. And Microsoft, many, many years ago, decided they were going to go with an OEM, other equipment manufacturer model. So that's why we have the Dells and the HP and 100 other different vendors out there. But they make agreements with Dell and HP and sell in volume to those companies, which keeps the cost down, and which is why Windows has 90% plus market share today. But essentially, it is a desktop operating system. If I wanted you to make a word processing document, software's there.
Right, I did all of those things. I used all of those programs, and I did copy. I was on the website. I copied an image. I pasted it into the document. I could edit the image. I mean, I could. It was just like using Word. Mm-hmm. It looked the same. It was set up the same. Format, insert, the same terms. Mm-hmm. And vocabulary and all of that. And so if you, other than the few small things that we'll talk about that came up, I would never have known that this wasn't a Windows machine or,
or a Mac.
Yeah, or a Mac, even though, I go back and forth between both and that too. And I would have never known the difference.
The other advantage of Linux, there's literally hundreds of different what they call distros, distributions, and Ubuntu is the most popular one right now. But they make different flavors or distros of Linux, and that's where we get in trouble as people that try to promote Linux and things out there, because you're entering another vocabulary.
Yes.
Whenever we throw out this word like Ubuntu, it's like, what is that? Sometimes the techie people kind of have a wry sense of humor, so of the naming things sometimes. There's reasons for it, but I don't know how well it goes over for the general public. But there's Scientific Linux. There's EduBuntu, which is designed specifically for education, that has specifically a lot of education for elementary and middle school, all preloaded. You can download a file from the internet and install it. And, if you're interested in it, my advice would be just go out there, get an old laptop that doesn't have any data or anything. You can't hurt it. It's 100% free, so just invest a little bit of time. And there's all kinds of information out there on the internet and support groups.
And so where would you send somebody? Would you send them to the Ubuntu website? Or are there other sites that have information on a lot of things like this that you recommend?
Well, because it's open source, there's a community around it. It's supported worldwide. So there's a number of forums and things. But for the official site, go out to the Ubuntu Canonical. Just go out to Google and type in Ubuntu, and you'll find all of those resources and things. This is the latest version, 12.04, and they've changed the interface around, so that launcher bar that you're used to over on the left-hand side of the screen, that's called the Unity interface. So there's been some interface redesigns out there. And I really didn't like it. The last two versions, they come out with versions about every 6 months, which are kind of like beta versions.
Okay.
And it's a very rapid development cycle. And it had a bit of a bumpy road because it wasn't as stable and there was a lot of things. It was a new, we talk about we don't like change.
Right.
And you just mentioned that, it's just like Windows or Mac. It's just different one. It's just kind of a different way to do it. It's just getting over that mindset of doing things. And even us, even we inside the Linux community have some trouble with that change. Because we've always done it this way. We're used to doing some things. But there's a lot of innovation going on.
Well, and there's some things that we do all the time, and we don't want to think about it. We just want to be able to just do it.
Mm-hmm.
And so that was something that amazed me about doing this, because it was very smooth transition to using it. I worked on it and I played on it, and to really get a feel for it. And, the biggest thing, since loc.gov is my home away from home, I spent a lot of time on that website. I was able to use it, you know, with the Chronicling America, the newspapers. You have where you go through these different PDFs and you zoom in. You can clip specific.
Did you have any trouble with PDFs?
None.
Okay.
None at all. I mean, it was just, it was exactly the same as everything else I've used. I tried audio. I did motion pictures. You know, some of the Library of Congress movies or films are still, we have the three formats. Mm-hmm. Off the top of my head, I can't remember which one I picked. I should have tried
what
all
were the three?
Three,
like QuickTime Movie, MOV, MPEG, and WMV, or Real Media?
No, Real Media.
That's really old, back in the 90s.
So, but I think I did the MPEG, and it showed no problem. It was quick to load, and I used it. Also, getting on the wireless.
Yeah.
I used it at home and I used it on campus, and it immediately connected. I didn't do anything. Mm-hmm. I mean, it was just, again, a smooth transition. And all of that surprised the heck out of me because I really thought it was going to be this process with all these steps that I was going to have to go through. And it was smooth. The only thing we talked about a few minutes ago, I'm used to the Control-Alt print screen. And I did that, and it took me to just a blank screen with a cursor flashing. And it was, I was like, oh man, I'm not sure what to do here and that. But then you
did you get out of that, or do you have to reboot to get out of it?
That's when I hit Control Alt Delete to get to Task Manager, which is not there.
And, which does a reboot.
And that restarted me and everything came back. Mm-hmm. I mean, it was good to go.
But it wouldn't have been good if you had a word processing document that you hadn't saved.
Very
That was all with, you know, that's kind of one of the, you know, if you do that, like on Windows machine, it says, like, are you really sure that you want to do this? Or it'll give you the opportunity to save it. It just did it. Whenever.
Right, right. And you know, the shutdown and the restart were
very
within
quick.
15 seconds. You know, it was already turned around.
Yeah.
And that, and those were, I mean, those were really the biggest changes that I saw, other than you and I talked about Java and some different things. But what I really learned from this is how we're creatures of habit, and it's not the operating system, it's the programs that I'm used to using. Mm-hmm. And now I've got my iGoogle homepage and everything is right there, so I don't
that should
have,
all be transparent it because it's just a browser,
right? Right. Mm-hmm. And so you know, it really is, I couldn't believe how much I'm more into the programs or the browser or the website that I use than I am how I'm getting there.
Mm-hmm.
And the fact that I switch back and forth between the iPad and the Mac and the Dell here on campus.
Mm-hmm. They've all converged.
Right, right. And it's you know, and it's not about that anymore. Now it's about the programs that we use.
Mm-hmm. And the program that's loaded by default in this Unity interface is LibreOffice. I don't know if you caught that in the title, but Libre for free out there.
Somebody's clever.
Yeah. So, and
I was
all
thinking
one...
Zodiac. So.
Yeah. So it is 100% free, the office and things.
And then the Ubuntu Software Center. When I, it was like,
did you play around with that? You found that?
I did. And it's like, it reminded me of the App Store.
Did you install anything
from
the store? 90% of the things out there are free. They're starting to add a few paid programs. I mean, there are paid programs that you do have to pay money for Linux, but 90% of them are open source and 100% free. For example, there's like a Stellarium, which is like an astronomy type program. You can go out there and type in astronomy or something in Ubuntu software. And
there it is.
You find it? Is it called a Stellarium?
Stellarium.
Okay. Mm-hmm. Click install. It says free, doesn't it?
It does. And I.
There's a little more info button if you want to learn a little bit more about it.
It asked for my password. I put that in. There it goes. It's already installing.
Well, you now have a planetarium in your computer because that's what that program is.
Very cool.
And like I said, there's open source programmers from all around the world that do that for free.
That's what I was going to ask you. Who's creating these? Mm-hmm. Who's sharing these? And what's their motivation?
Growing up, you know, being a little bit older, I remember a time before the internet. And it's just kind of a philosophy thing that people in the open source community believe that software should be open and free and shareable back and forth. And there shouldn't be, you know, proprietary codecs and things, because that's a problem. And in fact, I think you ran into a couple of those issues. I think you mentioned something about it was asking for Silverlight.
Right, right.
Silverlight is a Microsoft proprietary program. In fact, I don't even think there is an option for Linux on Silverlight. So if you were a web creator and you made something that used this Silverlight plugin, a Linux user's out of luck.
Okay.
Just like on your iPad, Apple decided they are not going to support Flash.
Right.
So any website that has Flash, which is a very, very large number, it's completely invisible. You don't see a true experience of what that programmer meant for it to look like.
Well, and you know, when we were messing with installing the Java program, and I saw it said install on the Linux and that, and it's like, oh, I've seen that before.
We
I've
do
seen
the
that
same
on
thing
a lot
on
of programs.
Mac.
Right.
You do that on Mac and you do that on Windows.
Exactly. And so it's like, okay, it never, you know, really clicked before, but I've seen that many times on things that I've programs that I've downloaded.
And Java was a program originally created by Sun Microsystems that was meant to be 100% free. And it was the dream was to write your program once and read it anywhere. So it didn't matter if you had a Mac, a PC, or a Linux computer. Java was Java, and that interpreter would run on all three platforms.
And then what happened?
Well, then people want to start getting a little bit proprietary and say that, well, we want to use this. Adobe has Flash. You know,
right.
Adobe has all of the different types of plugins. And then, I mean, we talked a little bit about this last time. History's kind of repeating itself because we have these silos. You know, you have your Google ecosystem, and then you have the Microsoft, and then you have the Apple, and now you have the Oracle, and you have the Adobe, and all of these different things. You know, each one of them kind of have their own interest at heart. So they want to lock you into their system. And it's happening on the web, too, as we broaden out with these Web 2.0 services. Amazon, you know, the Kindle, we talk about the ebooks and things.
Right.
The same story's happening there on ebooks.
I just had a big discussion with my family on Mother's Day. We started talking about, I have a brother who has twins in middle school, son in high school, and a daughter in college. And he said, he's like, I don't understand why they don't just have them all buy tablets or readers and have all the books and everything on there and just be done with it. And so we started talking about it, and I'm like, well, it's a lot more complicated. And he goes, well, no, you can just download them. And I'm like, but you have the different types, you know, that you have to download. And so, but it was interesting because it is something that families are thinking about as well.
Yeah, it's, you know, it's big time in education. Apple has the iBooks Author, which is a wonderful program to create things easily. But not only do you have to have an iPad to be able to read an iBooks Author, they're locking you into that system. You have to use an iPad. It wouldn't work on your Kindle. Not only that, but they explicitly say in their license agreement, if I'm smart enough to know how to program and make this ebook, they deny you the rights. They say you may not, even if it's technically possible, you may not distribute this to Amazon or any of the different formats. So all these different tools, and Kindle's kind of doing the same thing on Amazon. You have this KF8 format that they're doing that locks you into the Kindle. So that's the clash between this open source community and all of these other things that we're dealing with. But as educators, you know, it kind of puts us in the middle of all of this, that we're kind of at the mercy of whatever the flavor of the day is for the standards.
Yes.
And if something suddenly happens that, you know, this new technology comes around, what happens to all of the old things? And Kindle's experienced this now, because before KF8, there was KF7. So are you going to constantly upgrade your devices and maintain that backward compatibility? Because if I bought a KF7 book 2 years ago and I buy a new Kindle Fire, can I still read it? And that's, you know, are we going to be captive to our devices?
Right.
So we really need to think this through and at least explore these different options. And I think part of it's just educating ourselves of all the turmoil that's going on in the world right now, because it really is a clash of the titans. Everybody's kind of doing a land grab for different parts of the market.
And it's interesting, because you would think you would hear more about the financial benefits of you know going into something like this, yet you don't hear it that much, and at least not in the circles I tend to be in. So
well, you're not going to hear it from advertisers, because there's nothing really to sell.
Nope. And so that's why it's important that we all have good relationships with our tech people. So they can help us
Should also mention Google runs Ubuntu.
Oh, really?
And because it's open source, that means you can get under the hood and look at the program and compile the source. And they actually have a version they're calling Gubuntu or Gubuntu that their employees actually use.
Wow.
So if, you know, that kind of tells you something there technically where it is. Because to me, a computer is a tool. You know, I want to get my work done. And if we have these options out there, you know, a lot of people are running Linux on the netbooks and some of the lower end hardware. And if it's 100% free, and if a school has, you know, for example, they have two carts, 30 computers, you know, this is 100% free that you could put on and run.
Can you use it on a mobile device?
They're starting to do. Okay. Have you heard of something called Android?
Yes, I have heard of Android.
Android has a Linux kernel.
Really?
It's actually Linux.
What's a kernel?
A kernel is the base of the operating system that talks between the software and the hardware.
Okay.
It's like a real low level, you know, language that talks between.
Okay.
So that's, you know, all of this is not magic. I mean, there's been a lot of engineering work and things as we've evolved over the years. But yeah, in fact, Ubuntu has a project with Android. And you're going to start seeing devices like my Droid phone. Mm-hmm. I can actually run Ubuntu on my Droid phone. They're coming out with some projects like that. And as we increase the processors, these quad-core processors and things coming out, I can run Ubuntu on my phone. Asus has a project called the PadPhone coming out. It's the size of a phone out there that you can take and plug into the back of like a little tablet device.
Yeah.
And that little phone's essentially your processor. You plug it into the back, then you have the big 10-inch screen or whatever size screen it ends up being. So there's a lot of innovation.
Yeah. And yet, as we're sitting here talking about how things are merging together, we still have these separations.
And they all, you know, over the years, as you said, Windows and Mac have gotten a lot better and a lot closer and things, and Linux on the open source side of things. So other transitions on using it? It sounded like you made a pretty smooth transition for using it.
I did. You made me a believer because I did not expect it to go well. I thought I would try it and say, okay, Tom, I tried it. I'm done. Mm-hmm. And I actually used it, you know, and did things on it. Didn't, like, have it out and then put it away and get my other computer out to work on what I needed to work on. And like I said, it has the same look, the same feel. And I felt like it was very user-friendly, which was very nice. And so, you know, I expected it to be very much for developers and
that's the reputation it
and
has.
Very techy that I, you know, would be lost. And even though I'm pretty comfortable with technology, I still felt I was afraid it was going to be way over my head. And it wasn't. I mean, like I said, I went out and played. I was able to listen to SoundCloud and all these different sites that are out there.
Well, that's a thing at the browser and the Web 2.0, depending upon how we go. You know, in the world, the beauty of the web and the web 2.0 is you just need a browser. So OS becomes irrelevant.
Right.
Which is a great thing for like technical people in schools taking care of the equipment because we don't have to run around and install this application 500 times on all the computers in the district.
Right.
Or then we have the app model, which is just kind of the opposite of that, where you go to the app store and you download this, you download that.
Independently. Right.
Now, the benefit of that is you have offline access to those programs. Because if you don't have internet access, the web's dead, you know, you can't get to it. So that's really that's not the only benefit, because also if you run things locally at the local level, your speed's going to be increased because you're right there. You're not going back and forth between a server, you know, on the internet back and forth. So you have some delays there a little bit. But with today's broadbands, that's becoming less and less if you're fortunate enough to have broadband.
Right. And, you know, I mean, the wireless at my home isn't that. It's okay. It's not great, but
mine's not.
I mean, like I said, I had my wireless from my phone line to my internet's good. My cell phone's a whole nother story.
Yeah.
And that, but I was very pleasantly surprised. And now when I see that, I'll have a better idea of what it is and know that that's an option. I'm still trying to wrap my hands around who's going to use it and who's going to get it, because I still think it's purist are going to be drawn to it. And it's kind of like your Mac people and your, you know, it's still sort of that world. But for people who have older machines and schools that, that have machines that still work fine, and they hate to trash them because they know they can use them.
Well, it's all about extending your budgets, as you know, with the tight budget times. Although it's not only that, because you can run, you know, Ubuntu on a, on the most recent hardware, and it's just lightning fast. I mean, if you think that thing's fast, you ought to see what today's computer can do. Can do with it. So
very cool.
Well, I appreciate you, you know, taking on the Linux challenge.
Yeah, I learned something new.
And maybe we can, over the summer, let you kick the tires on it a little bit more and kind of come up and, you know, the positives and negatives and talk a little bit about it. But in particular for a school, whenever you have 20, 30, 40, 50, 100 devices and you talk about those licensing fees.
Oh, man.
And for me, it's just so nice to be able to install a program and not have to look up a license code.
It's
boom, you know, there, well, you're done.
And you buy it and then have to upgrade it.
And they do sell system76.com and some other vendors do sell brand new laptops with Ubuntu installed.
Really?
So I think it's an up-and-coming thing. As browsers and Web 2.0 becomes more prevalent, you know, the reasons between the different OSs kind of go away. And it can make a significant amount of difference in the dollars that you're paying for, you know, software and hardware.
Very nice. Excellent.
Okay, we're back, and I should mention we're recording this on May 23rd because Cindy's getting ready to head out of town for a little bit. So,
can
you tell us where you're headed off to?
I'm on my way to, well, I will be on my way to D.C. We're having our national meeting of the Teaching with Primary Sources program directors. So, what started as a small little group of about a dozen, or even smaller than that before me, has now grown to almost 30. Partners in various states, and then you have regional partners who work with multiple states as well. And we all get together and we talk about the strengths of our programs, what we're doing, different activities that we're doing, and how we're using, you know, different tools to reach out to the teachers that we work with. And so, you know, one of the things we talk about is we talk about the podcast. We talk about our blog, the blogs that are used, the library's blogs and things like that, but just how we're reaching out and going beyond, because we all do workshops with teachers, and we're getting ready to do ours this summer, and then we do them throughout the year. But, you know, as going back to kind of what we talked about earlier, the creature of habit thing, where we do find resources or things that we're comfortable with, sites that we're comfortable with, whatever, and we keep going back to the same thing. And so the Library of Congress, as well as each of us as individual partners, we want to come up with tools so teachers will keep coming back to our site.
Right.
And when they're working on developing curriculum, say, wait a minute. Okay, I'm going to check this out.
Right. And that's hard to do. I find myself, you know, you give yourself advice. It's like, you really should be doing this, but time kind of gets away. But that freshness is something you constantly have to work on.
It is. And, you know, you go into Google, you do a search, and you have just this huge list of hits for whatever you're looking for. And then you have these sites bookmarked that you use all the time, or just the ones you go to. You know you're going to find something there. And we go back to them all over and over again. And it's good that we freshen up and we try something new and we look at something new that's out there. And so that's one of the things that we do with these meetings. We talk about what our program strengths are and what the different programs are doing, what kind of activities. You know, one program in Chicago was doing a program with the QRT codes. What are the little?
Oh, the QR codes.
QR codes. Yeah. Dang, I should have looked that up.
Got it.
But with the QR codes and different things that teachers in different areas are doing with technology, something that's, you know, near and dear to my heart is being in a rural area. Any of the virtual field trips or things like that that we can develop. So it's kind of a chance for us to highlight what we're doing in our programs and what our strengths are, what our challenges are, and we can support one another. Because whether we're in California or Illinois or New York, you know, Colorado, everywhere, a lot of the teachers face the same problems. And we do have, you know, a lot of teachers who have limited technology access. Mm-hmm. And so we work with, you know, how do we create resources for them mm-hmm. when they may or may not be able to get onto the Library of Congress website? Mm-hmm. And, you know, so it's a chance to really meet with the other directors, and we all just focus on how to move forward with the program. Mm-hmm. And we meet, and we also get to do some cool things and tour.
Yeah, I'm probably going to be jealous what you're about to say.
We meet in the Library of Congress, usually in the Jefferson Building.
You have dinner in like the rotunda or something.
They have some back rooms that mm-hmm. are just ornate and beautiful. And, you know, so we get to hang out in those rooms and meet and eat in there and everything else. And, you know, just get to go behind the scenes of some of the exhibits and mm-hmm. see some of the resources and see actual Civil War map books down mm-hmm. in the vault and things like that that mm-hmm. just are amazing experiences. Mm-hmm. And that. So, yeah, so I'm heading out there next week. And I'm sure we're going to talk a little bit, too, because in the fall they're starting planning for the National Book Festival already.
Yeah.
In September.
Are you going back out for that then?
It's really nice. They plan our meetings usually where they coincide with that. So
is that on the mall? Is that where they have that?
Yeah. And it's an amazing experience. And something they've done with that is the podcast and the webcast of the authors talking about their books. Mm-hmm. And they're available. And mm-hmm. from years past, they're available too. So if a teacher in a classroom is, you know, teaching about a particular author, they can pull that up and have that author reading the book
right.
or talking about their motivation and inspiration for mm-hmm. writing a book. So, again, it's these tools that are out there that, since all of us can't be there, the technology is a great right. way to make it accessible for all of us. So, yeah, so we're going to go out and talk about it. And, you know, we look at the different TPS program sites, and of course we always think ours is the coolest, but mm-hmm. but there are some really neat things mm-hmm. out there.
Yeah.
And then our whole goal is to direct people back to the Library of Congress and use those resources that are available there. It's funny because I go to things, you know, events at schools and different places, and I'll run into teachers I've done PD with, and they'll come up and they'll say, "Oh man, I just taught this. I should have looked at the Library of Congress mm-hmm. website." And that goes back to that creature of habit thing. Mm-hmm. We have certain sites we're used to using, mm-hmm. and we know, you know, we're comfortable with and can find. And so, but it's good to shake things up once in a while.
Right. It takes multiple ways to do that. Not any one way is good for, you know, one individual or, right. or the other. So even though we do these podcasts and things, you know, hopefully people are getting benefits out of there. Yeah. But it also continues that professional development that, you know, it's like, oh, I went to this workshop last summer. But, you know, if you listen to the podcast, you can continue to be updated with all of the, right. the most recent things. Or the same thing with a Twitter account or a Facebook page, whatever. Yeah, different methods and avenues out there to keep the message going.
And I think it's important we use different methods. Only use one, you're going to miss part of an
right.
audience.
Right.
And, you know, and some of the TPS programs do a lot of online mm-hmm. professional development. We didn't get a good response to that at all. Mm-hmm. The teachers that we talked with and met with didn't want online. Mm-hmm. They wanted face-to-face in a classroom. We meet with them after school, and, you know, during the summer, all summer, we do professional development with teachers who want to learn how to use the primary sources on the mm-hmm. library site and things like that. And, too, I think then they get a chance to play with it mm-hmm. and have someone there to walk them through it a little right. bit. And so it's been really successful, and we've had a ball working with the teachers doing that mm-hmm. face-to-face, hands-on. Mm-hmm. And so I wouldn't trade that. Online is good, but I wouldn't mm-hmm. trade that for anything. Yeah.
My technology pick of the week this week is a tutorial for Ubuntu version 12.04. I'll have a link in the show notes for this, but this is a very nice, quick, concise little tutorial, and very quickly gets you familiar with the Ubuntu desktop. And, you know, as we go on, Cindy, I'll provide you some more resources and things. One thing that I didn't even mention at all, and I don't know if you saw anything about it, but I just showed you that little shortcut because you were talking about shortcut keys. Mm-hmm. And this is the tip for the week out there for Ubuntu Linux users, is if you hold down the super key.
Which I had no idea what the super key was.
Which is that little key between the control and the alt keys over on the left-hand side of the keyboard, and most likely it's got a little picture of a Windows flag.
Right.
Because 90% of the world's out there Windows, so that particular key is called the super key.
Super key.
So if you press and hold that down, that will give you a transparent menu and a lot of different little screen shortcuts, like Control-C, copy, Control-V, paste, and then some of the other specialized versions. The other thing that's new in this version, this Unity version, version 12.04, is something called the heads-up display, the HUD, H-U-D. And didn't mention this one at all, but if instead of just pressing and holding down that super key, just tap it, just click it once.
Oh, wow.
That bring you up a little search box?
Actually, no, it brought up my recent apps, recent files, mm-hmm. and downloads, so mm-hmm. it gave me all my most recent activities, again, in a very cool kind of mm-hmm. iPad mm-hmm. app mm-hmm. look.
Or the iPad kind of could look like Linux. You know, whichever came first there. I think Linux had a head start on that.
Sorry, Linux.
But anyway, if you just tap it, is there a little picture of, I can't see your screen, a little picture of magnifying glass up there?
Yes.
Okay, that's your search. So if you were looking for an application and if you knew what it was called, like, for example, like I said, unfortunately, Linux has a habit of naming things kind of weird. So if you type in GIMP, G-I-M-P, it's like, what in the world is GIMP?
GIMP Image Editor.
Mm-hmm. And what that is an equivalent to Photoshop.
Very cool.
And like I said, the wry sense of humor that Linux programmers have, it stands for GNU Image Manipulation Program. So there you go, for what it's worth. Just as an FYI, on a Windows machine, which I happen to be sitting in front of one here, if I press that Windows key, it brings up my little menu right down here, and I've got the same little search feature right here. So if I wanted to type Word, you know, Microsoft Word,
right?
Type it in, boom, my number one choice at the top is open Microsoft Word.
Didn't know it did that either.
So there's another tip for Windows 7 or Linux, either one.
Yeah, because I was looking to see if there were any games on this thing and didn't know where to look, so now I know.
You can type some games out there. It's not nearly as extensive. Windows is known as kind of the ultimate gaming platform out there. It's not nearly as extensive, but there are several, and most of them out there are for free.
Very cool.
So anyway, back to the tutorial here. I'll have a link in the show notes for this. So it talks about the launcher. It talks about the dash. And like I said, I probably should have gave this to you first as kind of a helpful hint. But I think you tested the waters very, very well because I just threw you into the deep end of the pool and say sink or swim. So, and you swam very well. So
thank you.
Good job.
Very good.
And so that'll wrap that one up. It talks about some of the shortcut keys, the recent apps, the heads up display, and just a real quick overview for those of you that may be trying Linux. And as I said, summertime's a great time to do that.
To play
and learn.
That's right. Okay, yeah. You know, when we used to go on vacation, the boys, we'd go to different sites, and the boys would say, why do you have to try to make everything fun-educational? So there we go.
There
you
are.
That's our fun-educational. Mm-hmm. All right, well, my tech tip, and I'm starting to feel like your color man.
Yeah.
That you're doing the serious, and I'm, you know, adding.
We'll have to switch that up in the future.
But I found a search engine that I just completely fell in love with. It was just so cool. It's called Oolone. OOLONE, and it touts itself as a visual search engine. And I put in Memorial Day, it gives me screenshots of a lot of different websites.
It gives you some cool little animations.
It does, with the little figure eight or the infinity symbol, mm-hmm. and which it is an infinity because, as I told you, I received for results 4,470 on Oolone, mm-hmm. compared to the 900 million mm-hmm. on Google. But if you've been to a website and you're not sure what it was, this is awesome because you get these screenshots and you can look at them and say, okay, that's the one that I was looking for. You can also, you know, see if, say, it's something you're thinking about using in a classroom. Sometimes quickly you can look at it and see this is an advertisement site or this is a paid site for something. Mm-hmm. probably don't want to use this, but again, I'm just a very visual person.
Mm-hmm. It's great for visuals. Yeah.
And I really liked it. And I think it's a little more engaging than the list that you get with Google.
Mm-hmm.
And so if you do have students, it's just, it's a fun way. Just another option mm-hmm. that's out there.
That would be a fun one to play around, like Library of Congress on Memorial Day. I wonder if it pulls from the Library of Congress database. Give that a try here real quick.
I will.
Why I tap dance here and make
You could have made up a commercial or something and done the ad. All right, so it's going through. Interesting. Now I have 10,400 results.
Did you type Library of Congress or just LLC?
Library of Congress plus Memorial Day.
Cool.
So,
you know, that search is just, we could do this whole show on just search tips and tricks out there on doing it. Because people just, you know, just think, well, I'll just type it in and that's everything there is related to it. It's like, no. Try different search engines, different things, put things in double quotes, use and plus and all of those other tricks.
And, yeah, sometimes it's amazing what you'll find different places, so... yeah, it is pulling from the Library of Congress.
Very nice.
So very interesting. I'll have to try this out with a couple of other things. Not that you shouldn't go to the Library of Congress website and find it there, but... Right.
But it's good that it's visual, pulling from those sources, yeah.
Absolutely. And so, yeah, it's just, you know, like I said, it's just another way to present information, and sometimes it's a good way to get people's attention.
That wraps up episode 132 of Tech Talk for Teachers. Show notes for this episode and archived episodes are available on the web at the EIU Instructional Technology Center website at eiu.edu/ITC. To leave a comment or suggestion, please send an email to techtalk@eiu.edu or leave a comment on the Tech Talk for Teachers blog. Until next time, this is Tom Grissom.
Cindy Rich.
Keep on learning.